I'm setting up for this very exclusive club. This piece is, I call this piece Provoked by the Clown, and it's one of the impetuses for this piece is a novel by Heinrich Böll, a German novelist. This book, The Clown, was written in 1963. Anyway, the central character in The Clown is a serious clown, a intellectual clown. And the book takes place at the end and then post-World War II, up to about 10 years after World War II. And the clown's parents are very wealthy people from a long line of wealthy people. Excuse me. And they've done very well during the war. They've survived and flourished. And one of the things that I thought about with this book is World War II and the violence of World War II, the chaos of World War II, on all sides or on all the peoples that were involved. Americans are bombing cities too, and the lots of brutality. I used to wonder how my parents survived World War II when you didn't know who was going to win, and now recently I've been thinking. It must be very similar to what I'm surviving now. Such a tall, fragile, little bun of an old potato. Center in a soul, mischief both do be readable. There is a soldier,
what have you seen and felt you've seen and
So
another thing.
Spokesman on the history of torture, talking about what a clumsy technique it was, and one of the things that he mentioned, what the evidence that he was presenting was that in Algiers, for instance, and this is something that I've heard from other people who studied torture. Most of the people tortured don't know anything anyway. It doesn't even matter, of course. But so he was saying that, for instance, in Algiers, that the stats showed that 20 people. Only one person knew anything of every 20 people that were tortured, and that he thought that the important factor in keeping torture alive in 20th century democracies was that was this amnesia about torture post World War II, post World War I, post Vietnam, that this amnesia and it strikes me that the very clumsiness of the technique of torture is central to its appeal, that it keeps the lights out, it allows this kind of blind obedience, and it deflects criticism and responsibility, and it cradles doubts, and it feels good. It's not even thought about. Because I could talk about things that I couldn't talk about socially, and when I would talk about things to people, often they would pretend they didn't know what I was talking about, or nobody ever heard of this, and this never occurred to them. So, but when I did it, when I made something out of it, then they laughed, or they walked away, or no, not walked away, but they and then I could see that. They knew something about what I was talking about. I wasn't just like floating in space. We are the same. I watched her at a wedding, and she did exactly the same step over and over again on the dance floor. I mean, I'm talking an hour, 2 hours. It's kind of scared me. Thank you. Mother's always worried about doing the right thing, you know. Either you are the enslaved or you are the enslaver. Clown. He does these turns. He's just like the corporate turn or the turn in buying the ticket in the train station. And they're always very strikes me that the description of his work in the book is quite contained. He's his own instrument, and it's this contained stuff. And it's about social realities. It's about things that everybody knows about. At one point, the clown's father, the clown is down and out, and he's lost his. The whole book is he's lost his. It takes place after his wife has left him, and he's broken his leg, and he's beside himself, and he's not getting any bookings, and he doesn't have any money, and he comes back to his hometown, and calls up his multi-million-dollar dad and asks him some bread, and dad says, "Well, only if you will do this." There's a critic who says that he thinks that you do good work, and if you will just study with so and so for a year, I'll pay for that study, but I won't pay for anything else. But the clown knows what he's doing, and he has a year. He wants to develop something else, and his When I was a kid, when I wanted to sing, my father wanted me to take guitar lessons, and I refused because I thought he was going to turn me into a folk singer. You know, he was going to try to take away my expressive power. I mean, what else do I? Survival. Survival became a priority for me at a very young age, and that priority, I think, has made me live a much more contained life than I should. It is the priority. It's the first pay attention to, and learning how to. So kind of the story, or one perspective on the story of my life, certainly from my perspective. Is this being able to survive and not buckle under the needs to survive and to flourish, and the clown, I think it's one of the things that appeals to me so much about the clown, because of course I identify with the character, and he's gone his way and found a way to talk, and you know, like in the Middle Ages, when the jester was always the you know, could get away with saying all kinds of things to the king that nobody else could say, or at least for a long time. Nobody cares about it more than me. I'm going to do Condoleezza Rice imitations all the way through. Nobody cares about it more than me. Nobody feels it deeper than me. Nobody needs it more than me. I mean, that's, you know, there's like two parts to art. There's the craft, all these mechanical skills, the scales, and then this, if it's music or whatever it is. And then there's the other thing that at least I have to practice, this telling of the truth, this getting beyond where I was before, being able to put myself in surprise myself, shatter myself, and it's always in a good way, at least so far. And beyond those kind of polite illusions, because that's the difference between making art and having polite conversation, at least to me, with somebody. Because I can say things that, you know, may be considered impolite. Of course, I don't know, maybe it was a very narrow existence I was living in, and I don't know how you can judge this in terms of, I don't know if it's, you know, if everybody's got if it feels, you know, like they're living in a kind of a tank or something, but it's this being able to So I said the whole book takes place like maybe 1954, about 10 years after the war, and the clown's marriage, and he was married to a woman that he was childhood sweethearts or teenage sweethearts with, and he not only loved her, he loved her father. It was a whole thing. It was, he used to go and have dinner with them, and they lived above a store that they owned, and they gave him enough food, and he lived in a fancy house with maids and never got enough food, and of many kinds of food he didn't get. get enough. And so it was so he's in the middle of the whole book is spent, and he's in the middle of tossing and turning from this, and his wife leaving him, and he's making calls to people, you know, trying to get money, trying to find out where his wife is. He knows who she's with, she's left him for somebody they know, and trying to find people to see because he's very lonely and he's stuck there with his leg. At one point, I was in staying with some people in Osaka, Japan, and they told me that the street that I was living on, that it had been completely bombed out during the war, and that the people had gone and sat in front of the buildings, and they rebuilt them exactly the way they were. Story at the point where the clown picks up the background story, the 1944 version of his story, and his mother is gung-ho for the Nazis' established powers, and she urges all her kids into the war effort, and she facilitates her children's bomb-making training in the backyard, and one of the kids gets blown up, but he's an orphan, so it's not such a big thing, and she hisses about the Jewish Yankees who are coming to defile the German soil, and Jewish is this catch-all adjective, this state of being. And my father made up a few words when I was a kid: boolabanga, rangasanga. You could boolabanga. It was a rangasanga thing. They were adjectives. They were verbs. They were nouns. They could mean anything. After the war, Mom becomes a leader of a reconciliation group and leading an anti-racist campaign. But she's the same opportunist. She's. I mean, how do you function? How do you function? You learn the game, you play it. How do you function? She's a very contained person.
Answer, hang up.
Said thank you all the time. She I used to drive me crazy. What were you thanking? Thank this. It's endless thank yous. But then I began to realize that it was a way to, it was a way to control the situation. You know, because I started using it myself, and as I used it, I began to understand its qualities, its uses. And now I can't stop saying thank you. I say it too much. I embarrass myself. Somebody has to slap me out of it. Thank you. All my life I've been talking to myself, and I imagine I'm not alone in that. If this book, The Clown, focused more on the mother clown, then I'd be able to see her more as a person. But it doesn't focus enough on her. And this is a good book, but it's not a great book. You know, like when I was a kid and I would read some, or even now when I read a great book where the characters are there and you can see yourself in them and you can't escape them. This, it's so clear, and sometimes it would drive me crazy because I wanted to be able to escape them. I wanted to be able to be looking at them from a little further away, but they were so beautifully drawn. They were so carefully defined that you know, it was inescapable. But this book is not quite at that level. And so you see them, you know, through a glass darkly, you know. I never thought that I could write characters because I'm too self-involved, I'm too anxious.
I
I say this and it means that I'm, you know, if I say this and it means that I'm, you think that I'm loving this. In corporate art, we must be getting some skinny range of perspectives. One of the parts of my process of getting more truthful in art and in anything, and this is what I'm always searching for. I'm always searching to understand what I didn't understand before because I'm so tormented. I want to feel better. And so one of the ways that I move further in this process is to get past the expert opinion that last caught my fancy, and to be able to see through it more and more, to understand more and more about it, to see it from different angles, to read more, to understand more, you have to know for yourself, or more for yourself. And that's what the clown's trying to do all the way through this book. And his parents, in a way, they don't seem to have much conception of that notion. Doesn't seem to be much of a what? But maybe they would call it something else, I guess. Because it's a mean world. I saw this Korean film. It's called Untold Scandal, and it's about the Korean version of Les Liaisons Dangereuses, and it's about seduction and on the upper class Korean world in circa 1700s, and so you seduce people, you convince them that you find them appealing, that you find them attractive, that they're, whatever level, in whatever ways, that you're spinning your yarn as a way to gain control over them. In the end, they humiliate them, or, when the story finally plays itself out. But at the end of this story, the chief seducer, he falls in love with the chief bad boy. Falls in love with the object of it, the person he's working to, hurt. And I had this. revelation when I was watching the movie. It's, oh, and you fall in love. You really show yourself. It's like a junkie who actually quits dope, and you see their personality for the first time. It's quite a vulnerable position. I know more about who you are, because this is a clearer picture of who you are, and certainly something that I've tried to avoid. But don't get excited. I love monkeys too. In bebop, and within the rules of the discipline of that music, I improvised such as I was being taught it, right? And at first it was hard, and I could only leave the melody for a minute or two, and then I could leave the melody forever, and wanted to leave those melodies forever, and for an improviser, it's very important what's filling your ears, and maybe I would argue for all of us. And so I'm looking for roots to what I can imagine. I'm looking to fulfill what I can imagine, so that I can get to beyond what I can imagine, to the next level that I haven't imagined yet. I think this is an ongoing, thing. And I do fulfill some of the things I can imagine, and so I know that this is, I have done that, so I know that this can work and get to the things, and I have gotten to things that I couldn't imagine earlier, because I had to get through those doors. And I want to think things and see things and be moved by things and move things in ways that are startling and enlightening, but hopefully not too crazy, as well as not too dumb.
Thank you.
This is so. I like that outfit. This is absolutely not. It's really great in the morning. There's a really limited. It's only so much, and then there's not anymore. You know what I mean? This is just not anymore. I wouldn't. Happy? He's really happy. Bern Nix, Andrew Bolotowski, Beth Griffith, Peter Schmitz.
And Lenore Von Stein.
Thank you, audience. Lenore Von Stein. Thank you. Good night.